Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to One for the Road, a podcast about running and the rest of your life. Hi, Lissy.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. You alright?
I'm very well.
Well, yeah, we're on a bit of a marathon downer after the weekend.
Oh yeah, that's totally our runner's low right now.
Yeah. So yeah, by the time you hear this, I'll be in New York.
Yeah, it's all right for some.
Yay.
Tell me then, in this slightly shorter amount of time, what you have been up to. What has been your high? I think I can guess.
So we, what should we do in the start of last time as well? London Marathon!
London Marathon! Ah, so did it live up to your hopes and dreams?
Yes. In fact, actually, I didn't tell you about this. I've got a London Marathon injury.
Oh, God, yeah, that's from the cowbell, huh?
Yeah. Not as bad as some people actually running's injury, but yeah. I have a little bit of chunk of skin missing from my finger where my cowbell was being rung constantly for about 4 or 5 hours.
Oh, but it filled you with so much happiness.
Yeah, it was good. So we were cheering and we were mostly around mile 21. We've got a little snippet of the sound of mile 21 just to give you an insight if you weren't running through it.
Oh, so that really is the full effect of mile 21, isn't it?
Yeah, that's just when, like, that's just like the base level of noise for the whole time.
That's
and
true.
Kind of like rose and
yeah. I love that someone had, there was a drum, there was music.
Oh yeah, the drum was good. Lots of cowbells, lots of whooping. Had some pom poms.
And they stole one. It was great. I adopted a pom pom for a bit. I feel like you just have to be there, and I think even if any other part of the course as well,
yeah,
like there is people all the time. What was your low?
My low was that it was bloody freezing.
Oh my god, yeah, that's my low too. We've got matching highs and lows this week.
Yeah,
so cold.
It was so cold. I tried to warm myself up by drinking some gin, and it didn't really work.
The gin didn't warm us, or the tea actually.
No, overall, a very good experience as usual. My favourite day in London.
Hooray!
Yay! Talking of marathon chat, as we seem to do a lot of that recently.
It's the season.
It is the season. Lots of marathon chat from two people not running any marathons.
Yeah, no marathon for us.
So I asked on Twitter last weekend, which was Boston Marathon weekend, what turned out to be quite an interesting topic. So I asked if you would run Boston Marathon if you hadn't run a qualifying time. Got a lot of responses.
I think you should share. My understanding of Boston is quite like slim, really. Can you enter at all, or do you need to have a good for age time?
So there's either a qualifying time, which are like super fast, which we'll talk about in a minute, or you can run for charity, which doesn't seem to happen so much with UK participants because they're obviously all American charities.
Mm.
They have 30 charities that they're partners with, and the absolute minimum is $5,000. So for someone in the UK to commit to raise money for a charity that no one over here has heard of, and that much money, I assume is why so many people don't raise money for charity. But I think it's a bit more of a thing if you're American.
Yeah.
You either qualify or you get a charity time.
But there's no, like, ballot.
No.
So it's hard to get into.
It's hard to get into. If you're our age and you're female, the qualifying time is 3:35. If you're male, it's 3:05. However, getting that time doesn't guarantee you.
Oh, didn't know that bit.
Because if they fill it up from fastest first.
Oh, I see.
So
if you're right on the edge.
Only a minute under, you're not likely to qualify. Mm. So I think there's an article actually I found, I'll tweet it, where I think the most recent year, the male average was you had to be over 3 minutes faster than qualifying time to actually get a space.
So qualifying time is a little bit redundant in some sense.
A little way, yeah.
Because you need to be even quicker.
Which is why men aim for a sub 3, because
I see.
So far that's guaranteed you.
Yeah.
Like a 3:03 wouldn't.
Wow. So it's hard to get into. And of marathons around, definitely one of the hardest to get in,
yeah.
I would have said.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the span of all the marathons we know about.
Yeah, so I asked this question, and I think if you are in the kind of running world, you've heard of Boston, and mm-hmm. pretty much, I'd say I probably got at least 30 responses, maybe even more, actually, because it went over a couple of days in the end. Not a single person said that they would run Boston without running a qualifying time.
Wow.
So it wasn't really that much of a debate in the end, because everyone just kind of agreed with each other.
So,
but I think my target audience of people that asked were very,
yeah,
specific. Very knowledgeable about what the race is, very kind of like in the running world, mm-hmm. and know people that will have qualified.
You know, there's a bit of a thing around whether, you know, you can't run anymore, you're injured, and now you have a race place.
Yeah.
And what do you do with it? And whether that's a race that's organised by someone down the road and it's 30 people, or Boston Marathon. Like,
yeah.
They can vary in size, and therefore what's the equivalent of them getting in, or, and how that makes it. And I think it does come to that thing of, like, there must be organisers have reasons why it's this way. And your name is attached to that race place. And whether that is because it's your good for age time, it's because you've qualified, and that's you personally. Or is that because insurance reason or a safety reason, that it's not just about the bib you're wearing, it's like you've identified as that person on their records. Whatever that reason is, I think they need to acknowledge that sometimes something goes on and someone can't run.
Yeah.
And what should happen in that situation? They should make it easier for those situations to be resolved officially.
Yeah.
Without that thing of like, oh, I spent £100 on a race place and now I can't run. How do I get my money back?
Yeah, or like making it easier to defer for...
Yeah.
I'm not saying you should be able to defer for like 5 years continuously.
No.
But like, I think the London way of doing it for just 1 year is really good, because
you
get two opportunities at it.
I suppose the more popular the race, the harder that is to do. Like Boston is a good example of that.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't be surprised if London take away that soon, given that none of the other... I don't think any of the other majors allow you to do that. Or at least not as easily as London does, because you can literally just log on up until the night before and say, nope.
Well, in a way, they shouldn't take that away. They should... like, races should be introducing that as a mechanism, because it is... It's preventing people do things that cause them possibly a lot more trouble at the end of the race. And you know, you have to acknowledge that this stuff happens. You enter races in good faith, and then, you know, you get injured or something personal happens and just your situation changes.
So I think the conclusion I drew from that was that most people don't really mind taking other people's race places for races, so they don't go to waste. Mm. Unless it's Boston, in which case people are very, very sure that you should qualify for it. But I think it's just because...
I think it's because it's to do
because
with...
Because of the, like,
yeah.
history around the race and the kind of, like, what's the word I'm looking for?
Like prestige, almost.
Yeah, that is the word I was looking for.
But then I think we've talked about how we both feel like we're not going to run... What is it? 3:35?
Yeah, 3:35. So this kind of got us thinking, is it possible for anyone to run... Not, I don't know, hang on, that didn't... Inclination wasn't on the right word. Obviously, people can run Boston qualifying time.
Yeah.
Can anyone do it? As in, is it possible for absolutely anyone to do it?
I.e. us.
Yeah.
So, our hugely scientific experiment begins now.
No, that's not why I'm agreeing to. Let's just get
five years,
right? Yeah, we are not trying. It's not our new Yeah, you have to listen to the podcast for a long time to see if we can qualify for Boston.
Yeah, it's funny because since I did Berlin, and then I was quite like, oh, if I was going to do marathons, I want them to be, to feel like they've got a bit of a cornerstone to them. So maybe the World Majors is a good option.
Yeah.
And then I've not really approached the fact that to be able to run most of them, I need to run really fast.
Well, yeah, that is the pretty much only guaranteed way of getting into all of the majors is run fast enough so that you qualify, even for like London, New York, Tokyo, I think there's a qualifying time. I'm not sure about the others.
Or Boston. Yeah.
Boston definitely is.
So it, like, that's a lot of time to take off, and how much of it is about the fact that I didn't do any running as a child and didn't do any sport as a child, so I have no physical, like, base fitness that I've grown up with necessarily. Like, I'm learning to run now, and it's been, what, 2 years? How do you go from, and if you're just, maybe it's the fact that I'm not naturally able to run at that kind of pace, my body's not built that way.
Yeah, I would be interested to know how much of it is like physical talent and like not worked on it, it's just something you're good at. Some people do just start running and they can just run fast. And how much of it is hard work / mental toughness?
It's got to be a lot of mental toughness, I do think.
I have been running for a long time, and not childhood long time, but like enough time.
A couple of years.
To know that I don't think I ever could run a Boston time, for both of those reasons actually. I'm not a naturally talented runner, and I'm not very mentally tough when it comes to marathon running.
No, and you have to be really mentally tough to break through a, you know, to take your time down from even to get down to that thing of like, I've chopped half an hour off my marathon time. That's very difficult.
Yeah, I'd have to take like quite some time off.
Yeah, but like the pace that is to go at means revolutionising the way you think and the speed you run at.
Although I don't know, it's interesting that if I was 85 years old, my time would...
You're well in. Great.
Qualifying for Boston. So I just need to, you know, bash out a 5-hour marathon in 50 years' time. I'm all good.
So really what we should be thinking about is consistency.
Yeah, playing the long game here.
I'm up for playing the long game. I didn't say I had a time limit on doing the World Majors.
Just ever. It'll probably be like 12 majors by the time we get to...
Yeah, that's true. Oh, I have to get that bigger. There'll be an even bigger medal thing where they all sit together.
I'd be interested to know if anyone has any thoughts on this.
Yeah, what's the theory?
Can you go from running a 5-hour marathon to Boston qualifying? Because I'm going to go with probs. Probs not. And if you... I'm not going to take up that challenge.
I was totally like, go on, daring you.
If someone says, yeah, you can totally do it, probably still not going to do it.
Don't try. So the next thing we have is something really lovely.
Yeah.
Our friend Leah, who we met running... How did you meet Leah?
I met Leah at a Nike Training Club class in Regent's Park, which I think still happens, on a Saturday morning, and just kind of going, and then she was putting together a team for the Nike Women's 10K, or what was it called then? We Own the Night.
Yes.
Kind of got... chatting to her at one of the classes, then we started running together, and then 10K turned into bloody running the marathon. So we've both run two marathons, Paris and London. We both did them at the same time. Kind of marathon link here again. She did London last year with me.
So I suppose a lot of your friendship started with running.
All about the running.
Yeah.
And she's moved back to New Zealand now, so we're going to call her our official Round the Other Side of the World reporter.
She's our long distance correspondent and recorded an on the run for us, so let's take a listen.
Okay, so this is my first run chat for One for the Road podcast. I'm an old friend of Lissy and Harry's from our running days in London, but I'm a New Zealander and I moved back to New Zealand in December last year, having lived in London for 3 years. And my final hurrah in London was running the London Marathon. And it was the best day of my life, hands down. Absolutely loved it. But after I left London, I went travelling for 10 months and running frequently became quite hard. I was in countries like Peru and Bolivia, and southern Argentina, and as Harry will know, it's just not that easy to find places to run that you feel safe, that you know where you're going. Yeah, so my running kind of petered off quite a bit. And I moved back to New Zealand in December, and the heat and humidity were really something quite new to me. I guess London gets hot, but it doesn't get as humid as it does here. So you would sit in the afternoons and just be drenched in sweat without even doing anything. So I found it quite hard to motivate myself to go out and go running. I'm very much like Lissy. I'm a cold weather runner. I've trained for my 2 marathons through winter, and I would much rather run in snow than run in the heat and humidity. So with moving back home and all the things that were going on and finding a house and a job and the heat and humidity, I just didn't run. And I wasn't really doing any other exercise, and I had all this, you know, big lofty goals to train for a half marathon, and I drew up a plan, and then when it came to it, I just didn't do it. Part of it was the heat, part of it was not really knowing any running routes, part of it was I wasn't working and I didn't have my routine, so I wasn't sort of getting up every morning and that was my run time, and part of it was I just kind of have no friends. All my friends in New Zealand, you know, they're not really into running, because it is something that I came across and started doing more when I was in London. It's not really the New Zealand part of me, so I haven't really made those connections yet. So anyway, long story to tell you that I decided to join a running club. I got a job in the city, and I started running to work with a backpack on, which is a little bit, it's a bit of a challenge to make sure you've got everything packed properly from the night before. But started sort of doing these run walks at kind of 5 kilometres to work. And along the way, I saw a sign on the side of the motorway, and it was advertising a running club. So I looked at it online, and gosh, it's embarrassing talking to yourself when you run past people, by the way. They're all looking at me a bit strangely. So anyway, I looked at it online, and I thought, oh yeah, that sounds good. So I signed up, and it's 2 sort of running club sessions a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays nights, for an hour. And then there's also a long run on Sundays, which unfortunately I haven't been able to make any of them, just because we're so busy in the weekends. We've been away a lot. It's just not happening. But for the past 4 weeks, I've gone every Tuesday and Thursday night, and I've pretty much had my fitness handed to me. I have been just schooled on how, you know, how slow I am. We had to do a 5K time trial, and I came last in the group. And when I say last, I was still 28 minutes, which for me, I felt like I was going flat out. I think my 5K PB is only slightly over 27 minutes. I'm not a fast runner. I've got short little stumpy legs, but I love running. And for me, it's not really about the speed. It's about achieving the distance, about doing something enjoyable for myself, about spending the time with friends as well. So I think I'm much more of a social runner. And I think this run club has really taught me what it is that I enjoy about running, because when you turn up and everybody like runs a marathon in the weekend just casually, and they speed off, and they're all really, really supportive, but I don't want to be the one tailing at the end. I want to be the one running next to someone and using the time as a catch up, and you know, rather than just feeling like shit really in my running. So I think maybe this run club is not for me. I'll keep searching though. From what I've heard, the free Nike runs that happen here are pretty much the same thing. Lots of super fit girls and really tight lycra that go like balls to the wall fast. So I'm not really sure that's my deal either. But I'm sure I'll find something. So in the meantime, I will keep on doing my little plod run walk to work. And I will keep my eye on maybe another race once my motivation and fitness picks up a bit.
Aw, Leah.
I know, so nice.
I want to give her a hug though.
Yeah. We miss you, Leah.
You're so far away.
So far away. Can't believe it's a whole year since we both ran London.
Yeah.
So it zoomed by. It was interesting to hear her talking about kind of finding your thing, like your people or your club or whatever it might be, and like your reason for running.
Because exactly, I think, like she says, when she was living in London, running was all about running with friends and running with people who you knew. And now it's a totally different format, and that isn't really suiting her. And interesting what she says about clubs and that definition of running club. I think it makes me think of school, like short shorts, running in the rain. Exactly as she says, like having your fitness totally challenged. That danger of being like the last one picked or the last person to cross the line, and there being quite a stigma around that. That's purely my perception, and like we know that there are many clubs that are not like that, or people who go running together who are supportive, and that's where it's interesting, isn't it, about finding what motivates you. Lots of those run clubs that do challenge your fitness and do want to push you around in the rain are, for some people, exactly what they want.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, that's really interesting, actually. Because it's similar vein to that, actually. I tweeted earlier about my foot and it still being injured and whether I should race in a couple of weeks. And a lot of people said, no, you shouldn't. You should rest up. Mm. Like, there's loads more races. And then I just randomly got a reply saying, do it. Like, you don't have to, like, I don't know, something really abrupt. Like, do it. Like, think over the pain. Like, you can do it.
Get
like,
through
push
it.
Through it kind of thing. And I was like, I don't like the sound of that, actually. But they're the kind of people that probably would be like, yes, I'm going running. I'm going to do my time trial. I'm going to run really fast.
Kind of like they need someone to shout at them. And maybe that's how you do turn your five-hour marathon into a three-and-a-half-hour Boston qualify time. Well, I suppose, like, different people respond to different stuff, isn't it? Like, I always know I never want to go near a military-style boot camp because I have no interest in someone shouting in my face. And actually, even if I really wanted to do the fitness exercises they were telling me, I just wouldn't because they were shouting at me. I'd be like, no, I don't want to.
Yeah.
Because I kind of don't respond that well to that environment.
I was about to say, or doing it in the cold, in the rain, that doesn't appeal to me. But that's exactly what Nike Training Club used to be like.
Yeah, that's
because
true.
Because it would be NTC on one side of the park and military fitness on the other. So everyone's doing pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just one's
their techniques.
Very different approach to the other.
Yeah, that's really true. I've never thought about the fact that NTC is essentially a military fitness style scenario, but it's just about its approach.
Mm.
It makes people like me who don't, particularly in the early days when I wasn't really running and I didn't really feel like definitely couldn't do a press up, definitely couldn't do a plank. I didn't feel embarrassed to be in a class. Mm. I didn't feel like I was picked out. So it is about finding what works for you.
Yeah, the right level of...
Yeah, the right level.
Level and attitude, I guess, of everyone that's with you. Mm. On the attitude thing, Leah said, mentioned something about people who just run casual marathons. I'd like to just say, casual marathons need to stop being a thing.
Similarly, it's all about your attitude. The culture of anything, like the culture of what people wear as fashion or what they eat or where they go, so much of it is driven by what other people are doing and driven by a kind of peer pressure, like a subconscious take-in of the culture around you. Like how recently you hear comments like, I know a lot more people doing an Ironman or doing a, you know, pushing themselves to do an ultra. As soon as there's a culture shift, as one person starts to progress like that, others will always naturally follow, and the bar is always being raised, and it's how you respond to that.
Yeah, that bar being raised thing is definitely happening, because I was talking about a couple of people we know that didn't have very good marathons, and I was like, I just don't think they're very well suited to marathon running.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like no kudos in running a 10k, but doing like, you could train as hard for a 10k as you could a marathon, but you'd just be training in a different way. But there's no kudos in taking like loads of time off your 10k time, because everyone's like, yeah, 6 miles, so what?
That's just attitude, what you're feeling from the people around you, because it's definitely true, isn't it, that when you go out of the environment that, like, the people you hang out with and you talk about it at work or something, say, well, I run to work, that's 5 miles. That's basically 10k on a Tuesday morning, and people still find that impressive. And yeah. You just take it for granted.
Yeah, your sense of perspective goes out the window a little bit, I think, when a lot of people are doing amazing things.
And I think that's interesting listening to Leah, because she ran a marathon a year ago, and she's finding it hard to get back into running a year later. And she's feeling bad in herself because it's not what she was doing beforehand. But yet, it's the achievement of the fact that she's just getting out and doing it that says so much. You could have said, I'm never going to run again.
I think that's why I find the casual marathon thing so dangerous, because for someone like her or me that's done marathons in the past, to then see people just like do a casual marathon just makes you feel really crap, because you're like, well, I couldn't run a casual marathon. I put loads of effort in. And also, if you're someone that's just starting out and then you see people doing that, then you think, oh, like, I'm finding this really hard. Why?
Yeah.
You just kind of...
makes light of a distance.
Yeah, it makes light of it. And then there's, like, no bridge between starting and getting to that point. And there is quite a big leap in between.
And I can't imagine that they can say at the end that was casual, but it must have hurt along the way. And I think sometimes people really forget what they've come from too. Like, it wasn't like every day of their lives they've been able to roll out of bed and run a marathon.
But I also think that relates back to our previous point about what makes someone able to do a BQ or something. Mm. It is because of that.
It's confidence.
The confidence and the being uncomfortable thing. And like not letting it get too much.
Yeah, a real mind over matter struggle. Their familiarity with what hurts and being able to get past that hurt is they're obviously much more trained at doing that than other people. And when you're learning to run, you're able to. Because when you learn to run, you don't know this feeling. You do literally feel like you're going to die. Like, how many times do you think of when you start to run, if it's really hard, you're like, I'm going to die. Like,
yeah,
I literally cannot go any further. And then all of a sudden you've gone a bit further.
Yeah. Do you know what I really miss about when you first start running is that, like, the progress is really, really quick. And you do feel, like, amazing. Like, I haven't died. I ran 20 minutes and I didn't die.
Yeah.
Like, now, I know that I can run 20 minutes and not die. So when I do it, I'm like, oh, it's not, like, an amazing achievement anymore.
And it's the incredulous feeling. I remember just always feeling incredulous and wanting to tell everybody, because I was like, it's taken me 8 weeks and I've done couch to 5k. Yeah. I can run 5k non-stop. Like, that was... I wish I could hold on to that feeling and get that every time I run.
Maybe that's what also people that do lots of fast improvement times do. They want that all the time. They want that feeling of, I'm getting better, I'm getting better.
Which I think is why they say that it's addictive. There's the article that talks about that feeling of why people do strive to do, like, an Ironman or an ultra, because you're striving to always find that next adrenaline rush, essentially. Yeah. Because it's the new feeling that you didn't feel before.
But yeah, it gets more and more and more and more effort every time.
I know. The commitment, it's high-price commitment. And then probably the payoff is temporary, because you keep going. You might never find that race or that that kind of push of your body that seals the deal. Yeah, you'll like, forever be searching for that.
At what point will you be like, okay, yeah, this is like the absolute peak of my
the
achievement.
Pinnacle.
Yeah,
but it's true because I say like, oh, I want to. It'd be a goal to get all of the world majors. But what will truly happen after that? How, like, I don't think I actually feel like I'll be like, oh, I've won.
Yeah,
I can stop now. Because that's not what it's about for me, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's it. I've said before how if I could bottle that feeling you get at the end of a marathon, like, you'd be a millionaire. It's amazing. But it still, for me, didn't feel good enough to make me think, yeah, I want to do that, like, 5 more times.
I gotta keep going.
So, yeah, it must be a reaction that some people have to it that is so much better than what I've had in order to keep wanting to do it again and again and the next thing.
I don't know if it's about the feeling being different. I think it's more like the want of wanting the feeling again. But that feeling of like, maybe it's more like unfinished business.
Mm.
If you repeat that, is it because you're like, you never feel like you've quite got it. It's almost more like the other way. Like you've achieved... You've had that feeling and sensed it and you felt completion. Whereas the people who will keep doing them are perhaps
like,
still...
for me now.
Yeah, are still kind of like... I would say the difference with like the way I feel is like I do want to do another one, but it's because I feel like I haven't nailed it.
Mm.
And it keeps me running, actually, is that the opportunity that I could get faster. Kind of the thought of the unknown makes me keep trying. Which is interesting because I don't think that's the same motivation for everyone. It can vary so much for different people.
Mm.
But also I know that it's not going to propel me to... I don't think I'm going to be like, I've nailed the marathon. Now I need to like triple that distance.
Yes.
Maybe it's just because I feel like I know my own self. Like I know my parameters.
Yes.
But
my parameter is if it involves a wetsuit, it ain't happening. Which is why
we are not going to become triathletes in this podcast.
I can probably 95% guarantee that I won't be running a marathon in the next year, but I can 100,000,000% guarantee that I'll never be doing a triathlon.
I struggle with the fact that I swim like an old lady, so well, I think we've rambled our way through that.
Yeah.
To make various points. Some of that is around club and how you find motivation to run, and maybe a club helps you find your motivation. But ultimately, we say the same thing always.
Yeah.
It's like, find your attitude, find your thing, and find your way. Like, and there will be people who do your thing.
Maybe I need to find a club that is specifically designed to get slow marathoners up to Boston qualifying time.
I love that you've just gone, I'm never doing a marathon again. But if I can get quick enough to run Boston.
Like how one, I said I'm never running a marathon again. Then I said I'm 95% sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry, I didn't clock that. Again. Yeah.
And three, today when I was buying annual travel insurance, I checked whether international marathons were covered. Just in case.
Oh. Running isn't just about marathons.
No, it's not. And I don't see, I'm getting swept in with
his
I blame London. And as per last year, if anyone sees me tweeting that I might be entering the ballot, stop me, for God's sake, stop me.
I think that's it for this week.
Yeah, I think so too.
So, next week you'll be in New York.
Yeah, when I'm back, I will have been to New York. So, yay, I'll have 2 more chins and...
and hopefully a lot of very interesting food pictures.
Yes.
Maybe take some of the view as well.
Yeah.
Are you going to do some, like, activity, fitness related?
Yeah, well, obviously we'll be doing a lot of walking and I really want to do at least one run and I've kind of been testing my foot a little bit, so I'll try and do that again. We're going to be avoiding spinning at all costs because that is now the devil.
That's what I did.
And
good.
If anyone knows of any good exercise classes or fun activities to do in New York that aren't spinning...
Yoga! Where's the good yoga in New York?
Should find some good yoga. I really hoped it was going to be warm enough to do kind of like rooftop-y stuff. But
yeah.
It's actually looking like it's going to rain the entire time.
Yeah.
So, but yay!
Indoor yoga.
That
sounds great. So, you can find us all over the internet.
Yes.
Go on. You look to me. I will tell you. We are on oftrpodcast.wordpress.com.
Yep.
And there you can sign up for our newsletter. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram, and that's OFTR podcast.
Yep. Maybe we'll start a Snapchat.
Oh my god, Lissy's got Snapchat. We can't even go down this route.
Okay,
now.
Fine. Just follow me on Snapchat. I'm Lissy_Webb. I'm getting really into it. I feel like I'm 15.
You're so teen right now.
I know.
You're very relevant, which apparently is an important word to use in this day and age.
I'm not sure a 28-year-old on Snapchat is relevant. I think that's actually tragic, but we'll go with relevant.
You're trying to be relevant.
If this works, then maybe we'll start an OFTR Snapchat.
Sure, sure.
I'm pretty sure that Harry's not down for that.
I don't really understand.
Okay, stay tuned for that one. Might be a long-term development.
Look out for Lissy's Snapchat, at least. But we'll see you soon.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.